So this is an extract from the Sermon on the Mount. I guess you've heard about that, Matthew 5 to 7, where Jesus is giving this long discourse to the crowds. And it's spoken to the crowds, challenging them to live differently. And I think I want to say at the beginning that this passage is primarily about who we are rather than what we say. So hold on to that, who we are as people rather than what we say. And it very much connects with what Jeff said last week, if you were here. Jeff talked about us being priests, revealing God to the world. And this is the same kind of idea. So I thought we'd just quite simply look at these two images that Jesus gives. Very simple pictures for them to remember and for us. And the first one, he talks about salt. We all know about salt. He says, "You are the salt of the earth." Now, salt was viewed very differently in Jesus' time than it is today. Salt is a bit of a no-no today, isn't it? We're told to take less salt. You know why? Because it raises blood pressure. In fact, I decided to do a little bit of a look on the internet, and I found this organization called WASH, World Action on Salt and Health. And you all knew this, didn't you, that March 4th to 10th was Salt Awareness Week. I did that one pass you by. I love these awareness weeks. Well, maybe there'll be another one next week, next year, and you can be aware of it. And it said on this website, "For too long, we've seen too little action on salt." I thought that's quite relevant to the way Jesus said it. We might come back to that. "For too long, we've seen too little action on salt. No country in the world has reached the World Health Organization's recommended intake of less than 5 grams a day." Anyway, that's enough of the well-being reminder. So that might be what you take away. No salt on your potatoes today. But it was very different in Jesus' time. Salt was a very valuable commodity. In fact, some of you might know that we get our word salary from the Latin for salt. A salarium, not a solarium, which is where you get suntanned. A salarium was what was paid to the Roman soldiers, and sal, a bit of it, meant salt. Salt was a valuable commodity, and sometimes the soldiers were paid in salt. Hence the expression, "He's worth his salt." But 2,000 years ago, of course, there were no refrigerators and no freezers, so salt was a vital preservative, spread around the food to keep it fresh and also for seasoning. And Jesus says, "We are the salt of the earth." Now, it's not a very difficult image, is it, for us to expand into, but I'll just do it to help us. So I think you have to imagine the world, and perhaps especially the people in the world, as a piece of choice meat or fish. Sorry for Anna, you and the other vegetarians, you can look away at this point. But we know what will happen to that meat or fish if it's left untouched. It will go rotten, be poisonous, it will be thrown away. And you also can't take a pile of salt and just put it in the corner of the piece of meat, because that won't do any good for the rest of the meat. It has to be spread around. And so to preserve and to season the meat, they would take the salt and rub it in right across all the meat or all the fish. Which reminded me of this classic book from the 1980s, Out of the Salt Shaker by Rebecca Manley Pippa. Anyone read this book? Look, 1980s. Read it, please read it. It's a classic, and the title says it. She's basically saying we've got to get out of our little holy huddles and get out there and spread out like salt. And in fact, she did a tour recently. I didn't go, but she did a tour of speak, and she's still saying the same message. I thought, isn't that great? She's an older lady still with the same message. And I read this quote by John Stott, a famous Bible teacher, again, from that period, really, who passed away a few years ago, and he says this. It's a bit long, but it's worth really chewing over. "God intends us to penetrate the world. Christian salt has no business to remain snugly in elegant little ecclesiastical salt cellars. Our place is to be rubbed into the secular community as salt is rubbed into meat to stop it going bad. And when society does go bad, we Christians tend to throw up our hands in pious horror and reproach the non-Christian world. But should we not rather reproach ourselves? One can hardly blame unsalted meat for going bad. It cannot do anything else. The real question to ask is, Where is the salt? That's very good, isn't it? Again, you might want to think that one over. You can read it on the internet. So I've got three simple challenges from these passages today, and this is the first one. Challenge number one, we are to get out there into the world. We are to spread ourselves out like the salt, individually, I think, and as a community. That's a picture of Birmingham, because that's where it starts. And I think it's true to say that most of us here spend a lot of time with non-Christians. Perhaps we just need to be more intentional sometimes in our relationships with them. We need to get to know people, to listen to them, to care for them. Maybe we can ask ourselves a question. We spend a lot of time with those who don't know Jesus, but are they friends? Now, who's been in our home in the last 2 to 3 months? Are they all nice Christians? Are there some people who are not? Who do we socialize with? And I want to encourage us to look and pray for opportunities. And sometimes it's just in little things. And I realize for myself, I just need to find time. See, I go to, like on a Saturday morning, I go to get the paper from the shop. And my objective is to get to the shop and get the paper and get back. And like yesterday and other days, sometimes, particularly when it's sunny, there are people out in the garden and they want to talk to me. And I don't really want to talk to them. I want to get to the shop, get the paper and get back. And I've been realizing I need to stop. I need to stop and just talk to these people. Be in less of a rush and have a little bit more time. Asda's getting some mention today, so we shop at Asda. Nothing wrong with Asda. Not any more than any other supermarket. And I just get to know this one guy on the checkout that is very chatty, and I've been chatting to him quite a bit, and I remember telling him how I traveled a lot to Africa. So every time we go, we have a chat about Africa. And I just need to see that as an opportunity to develop that a little bit more. There are many opportunities out there, I know for myself, and I think for all of us, if we stop and take a little bit more time. We're doing this thing called LYSIG, which is Leading Your Church into Growth. Is that right? And in the LYSIG discussion so far, we've talked about mission and maintenance. And we do need to maintain our church and the activities that we do, but we also need to be missional, reaching beyond our church to the needy world outside there. But I think our default is usually to put maintenance ahead of mission. I'm going to say something. Good job Jeff's not here. Maybe some of us need to spend less time in church activities and with one another, and a bit more time out there developing our relationships and our involvement outside. If we are to be salt, we have to get out of the salt shaker. So exciting ways we can do it, you know, and I know many of us do. We can join sports clubs, political parties. I don't know which one you join these days. You should probably start your own. Well, everybody else is, aren't they? Let's be honest. Start our own. There's a radical thing to do. Action groups. I mean, a few weeks ago, Kathy showed you a photo when we went on the litter pick where we live. It was great fun. They shut the road, gives you great power, and you walk down talking with others as you pick up litter. But sometimes it's just about talking to the neighbours, and it's a lot easier with summers here. We were out the front cutting our ivy. I hate our ivy, but the people before us made it grow up the side of the house. So we have the great job of cutting it every so often. But because we were out there, we got chatting to the other neighbours. Woody Allen, the kind of film producer, is credited with saying 80% of life is showing up. And I think maybe there's something in that for us. Sometimes just being there, like the salt, makes a difference. Just being there, out there with people, makes a difference. So challenge number one, I think, from this is just to get out there. And challenge number two, we're not told just to get out there, but we're told to keep our saltiness. Jesus says salt is no good if it loses its saltiness. Now, salt, sodium chloride, if you remember from chemistry at school, is a pretty stable chemical. But if it's put in water, it's very soluble. It will dissolve and leave a white powder that looks like salt but isn't. It's lost its saltiness, and so that could happen. And they got their salt in Jesus' time from around the Dead Sea. Now, if you know, the Dead Sea was very salty, wasn't it? And so the rocks around the Dead Sea were salt rocks. But they had to chip away the outside bit to get to the real salt in the middle. If they used the outside stuff, it wasn't any good. It didn't have any saltiness. It had to be thrown away. And Jesus says that we need to be pure salt. We need to be pure salt. I might have shared this before, but that doesn't matter. A friend of mine in a seminar he gives asked this question, are you a chameleon or a porcupine? Okay, weird question. Are you a chameleon or a porcupine? Now, those of you who know, a chameleon has the great ability to fit in with its surroundings. I remember once in Tanzania being in having a cup of coffee in this garden and someone saying, there's a chameleon in the tree. And it took me a long while to find it, because it was exactly the same colour as all the leaves around it. That sort of chameleon is very good at. And in that sense, it's lost its saltiness. It's no different than what's going on around it. It just fits in. A porcupine is the opposite. It's prickly. It upsets people who get too close. And there's no real connection with things around it. A porcupine, everyone's very happy just to let it get on and live its life. So you might like just to think about that, talk about that. Obviously, we're all somewhere in the middle. But we tend to be one or the other. Which are we most like? And I think we can seek to enjoy being with people. Join in all that we can. Be genuine friends. Share life together as human beings. But also know when to say no and when to not compromise our values. If you want to know when to say no, perhaps you'd like to read the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5 to 7, chapters 5 to chapter 7 has some very good stuff about how to live our lives. And then Jesus moves on, so that's about salt. He moves on and talks about you are the light of the world. It's interesting because he calls himself the light of the world, but here he calls the people listening as the light of the world. And much of this world is a dark place. People's lives are broken. Without God, people live with very little hope, with no forgiveness, and without inner peace. Have you ever been in a situation where you've experienced blackness and can't see where you're going? I remember once, again, sorry I'm telling all these stories about Tanzania, but I was sitting in this guest house in Tanzania, just sitting there, and the power went, which isn't unusual, and it was pitch black. There is no natural light, and it takes you a while to adjust. And I was completely paralyzed. I couldn't move, I couldn't see anything, and I eventually found my torch. I learned from that, never go more than arm's length from your torch. You know, darkness is a scary thing, but light changes it. And we have the solution to people's lostness. But I think for various reasons, we hide it. Jesus talked about putting it underneath here, didn't he? Hiding it. And I know I hide it because I'm afraid. I lack confidence. I think they're okay. I think they're not interested. I got all my excuses why I don't speak. But we do actually have the opportunity to point people to the one who offers them forgiveness, hope, peace, everlasting life. So the challenge number three is just to let our light be seen. People need to see the light. It's no point putting a bucket on top of it. It's no use. So just as I finish, I really don't want to make us feel guilty that we're not very good at living this Christian life. And we're not very good at living it out there. Because I don't want to underestimate how hard it is in our society, particularly as our society gets more secular. And that is a massive, powerful influence on people today. I work for an organization that works with students, not me personally, but our younger staff. It's really hard to reach students today with the message of Jesus Christ. Much, much harder than it was when that book was written. And there are lots of reasons, but one big one is secularization. They don't have a foundation. It's not easy. And even with our neighbors, that's true. It's not easy. You know, they're not coming knocking on my door saying, I hear you go to church, can you tell me more about what you believe? That's happened about maybe two or three times in my whole life. People aren't aware that they're in darkness. They're not aware that they need forgiveness. And they're finding all kinds of ways, aren't they, to live without God. But I want to encourage us that we have the privilege of living amongst them as salt and light, seeking to bring the greatest news ever to these people. And even if the people around us are showing no obvious interest, we can still be salt and light by the way we live our lives. We can be people who care, who love, who listen, who work hard. I've got a long list here. Who are honest or forbearing. Who are concerned about truth and honesty and integrity. Who have the time, like the Good Samaritan did, to stop and care for people. And I do believe, as I come to the end, that if we persevere and seek to be salt and light, we will see fruit. But if we live as Christians and don't take seriously this challenge from Jesus, then we're going to miss out on so much blessing, so much of what Jesus wants us to experience. John, the apostle, said, virtually at the end of his life, he said this, "I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth." I don't know about you, but I'd like spiritual children. And don't we want that at Christchurch? People following the truth because of our life. And so I think, just to finish, we need our own wash. We need our world action on salt and health, maybe on salt and light. We need, I think every week, we need our salt awareness week and our light awareness week to keep it going. And may God give us that grace and power to be salt and light where we find ourselves in this coming week. You are the salt of the earth, Jesus said. You are the light of the world. Shall we just pray? Father, thank you that it is a privilege to represent you in this world, and that the challenge comes here and to get out there and live as you want us to live. So I do pray you'd help us with the people that we meet, whoever they are, even as we mingle at coffee today and through the week, that we'd find ways that we can bring something of you into people's lives to bring hope, to bring light, and to bring Jesus to them. Thank you. It is a privilege to do that, but we do struggle and we need your help so much. So we ask for it in Jesus' name. Amen.